Okay, so today is January something, 3rd maybe? Is that right? Yeah, January 3rd. And we're just about to finish Moses, thank goodness. We've been talking about Moses for quite some time. So I left you last time with, I was about to, I didn't want to get in the middle of it and have to stop again. But I was about to start what I think is the strangest of the Moses stories. It's the very last one, 1861 to 83. Now I got a whole bunch of new things here. Okay, here we are, 61 to 83. You know, everything else we have read about Moses in here isn't all that strange, really. A lot of it is, the whole thing about his birth, the lark with the bulrushes, the being raised in Pharaoh's house, the murdering of, or the killing of the Egyptian, the various signs, the rod, his hand, all the plagues, the Ten Commandments called the book, and, water from the rock. And I think even maybe the rebellion of Korah was maybe sort of alluded to, I think, maybe. A lot of the Moses stories are here. Of course, as usual, you have the little twist that often puts a different cast on it from the Bible. But this last Moses story, I really don't know what to make of it. In my notes, I labeled it Moses and Muhammad, but I'm not sure if that's really right or not. I did not get a chance to reread it last night. I just have it marked. But I'll read it for you, and we can see what we make of it. So it's Surah 18, 61 through 83. So here we go. And remember the time when Moses said to his young companion, I will not stop until I reach the junction of the two seas, or I will journey for ages. But when they reached the place where the two seas met, they forgot their fish, and it made its way into the sea, going away swiftly. And when they had gone further, he said to his young companion, bring us our morning meal. Surely we have suffered much fatigue on account of this journey of ours. He replied, didst thou see when we betook ourselves to the rock for rest, and I forgot the fish, and none but Satan caused me to forget to mention this to thee, it took its way to the sea in a marvelous manner. He said, that is what we have been seeking. So they both returned, retracing their footsteps. They found one of our servants upon whom we had bestowed our mercy, and whom we had taught knowledge of from ourself. Moses said to him, may I follow thee on condition that thou teach me of the guidance which thou hast been taught? He replied, thou canst not keep company with me in patience. And how canst thou be patient about things the knowledge of which thou comprehendest not? He said, thou wilt find me, if Allah please, patient, and I shall not disobey any command of thine. He said, the other guy, well, if thou wouldst follow me, then ask me no questions about anything till I myself speak to thee concerning it. So they both set out till when they embarked in a boat, he staved it in. Moses said, hast thou staved it in to drown those who were in it? Surely thou hast done an evil thing. He replied, did I not tell thee that thou wouldst not be able to keep company with me in patience? Weird story. I'm not done yet. Moses said, take me not to task at my forgetting, and be not hard on me for this lapse of mine. So they journeyed on till when they met a young boy, he slew him. Moses said, hast thou slain an innocent person without his having slain anyone? Surely thou hast done a hideous thing. He replied, did I not tell thee that thou wouldst not be able to keep company with me in patience? Moses said, If I ask thee concerning anything after this, keep me not in thy company, for then thou shalt have got sufficient excuse from me. So they went on, till, when they came to the people of a town, they asked its people for food, but they refused to make them their guests. And they found therein a wall which was about to fall, and he repaired it. Moses said, if thou hadst desired, thou couldst have taken a payment for it. He said, this is the parting of ways between me and thee. I will now tell thee the meaning of that which thou wast not able to bear with patience. As for the boat, it belonged to certain poor people who worked on the sea, and I desired to damage it, for there was behind them a king who seized every boat by force. And as for the youth, his parents were believers, and we feared lest he should cause them trouble through rebellion and disbelief. So we desired that their Lord should give them in exchange a child better than him in purity and closer in filial affection. And as for the wall, it belonged to two orphan boys in the town, and beneath it was a treasure belonging to them, and their father had been a righteous man. So thy Lord desired that they should reach their age of full strength and take out their treasure as mercy from thy Lord, and I did it not of my own accord. This is the explanation of that which thou wast not able to bear with patience. That's it. Okay. What do you think? I mean, that's not in the Bible. I sure don't remember any story like that in the Bible. That is totally, you know, weird. And I don't know who this other person is. There's just no way of telling. But, it's a story of Moses' education.
Well, Don, did you say that it's attributed that it might be Muhammad?
Oh, I made that up. I mean, I don't know. I mean, or maybe I looked it up. It's been so long since I put my notes together, I don't remember. Or did I just maybe think that that was the way, you know, who this other person was? Got me. Or maybe the companion of Moses, maybe it was what I was thinking, you know, because he has a companion who goes along with him. And he's learning, of course, I guess, as Moses is learning. I think maybe that's what I was thinking at the time. So there are three people in the story, right? There's Moses, there's the companion, the one who let the fish go, right? And the other person that they run into, who basically is the instructor of Moses. Now, who these people are, I don't know. I should go.
Well, it is interesting because it's someone sort of above Moses, right?
Mm-hmm.
In some way, and you don't have that in the Bible.
No.
So it's the first inkling we have, kind of, of there's something beyond, mm-hmm. you know, the familiar prophets. There's someone to come.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, that's a weird one. I mean, like, you know, it's pretty unusual, I think, for the Quran to have a story that has no relationship whatsoever to everything that we're familiar with. All the other stories, there's often a little variant that's weird by our lights, but nothing that's so completely different from everything that we're familiar with. So that one, I don't know.
But Don, you don't know if it's a foreshadowing with that same person yet to reappear.
No, there's no way of telling. Don't know who this person is, but I do wonder who the companion is that we're talking about, right? Moses said to his young companion, blah 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 blah, and they lose the fish and that sort of thing. So anyway. All right. Well, anyway, so let's go on. I've relented. Ezekiel is the next person we're going to look at, not because this is where Ezekiel belongs historically, but
Can I ask a Moses question?
Yeah.
Can we talk about the tablets for a minute? You know, that whole thing was mentioned, but very briefly, and no content that I can recall was specified. Maybe an odd or an, but do you think that that was partly so they wouldn't get boxed in by the what was on the tablets?
You mean that,
you know, they could make their, you know, if they had listed out all the things, the commandments, then Islam would have most likely had to pick them up instead of making their own.
That's interesting. Although a lot of the laws and whatnot reflect the Hebrew ideas in the Ten Commandments. I mean, you know, there is no God but Allah. I mean, that's very much like the first couple of commandments. And then there are, of course, you know, the Ten Commandments are so obvious, right? I mean, you shouldn't kill, you shouldn't steal, and all that sort of thing. Surely that's in, you know, Islam, the Islamic laws go right along with that. So, I mean, it's not as though, you know, it's not as though they wanted to, that Islam or that Muhammad came up with a whole different set of ethical rules that are, that conflict with what's in the Ten Commandments. I think, you know, I mean, that's, but I, what you said, there's an interesting part to that, and that is, and this is a rule I think that we've seen over and over again, that the stories are retold, but the emphases are different. You know, I mean, you have things that we think are really important. They may be just fleeting, you know, references, and, you know, not gone into in any kind of detail at all. And other parts of the stories are, you know, really emphasized a lot. So, I mean, the stories usually have different emphases. And I would classify that just under that heading, that the content of the book was not as important as the punishment of Pharaoh. I mean, if you look at the Moses stories, kind of stand back and look at all those stories that we've been going on for the last, what, 3 weeks? However long it's been. The central idea in all of them, or most of them, is, you know, Pharaoh's refusal to believe in Allah, the punishment of Pharaoh, the drowning of his troops, and Pharaoh himself in the Red Sea, and all that. That seems to me to be the central theme. And it's important in the Bible, but I don't know. I'm not sure that overshadows the Ten Commandments, for example.
Well, we just have the story you just read, which is vague and seems minor, that got more ink than the whole thing about the commandments.
Well, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And violates one of the commandments.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's given a kind of utilitarian justification, isn't it, at the very end, right? I mean, these things were done, why? Well, because of another sort of greater, allegedly, a greater good. You know, like the killing of the kid. Well, he was kind of a crummy kid anyway, so they'll have a better one next time. Truly bizarre.
Yeah.
Truly bizarre.
As long as we're there, was there anything from the Quran which would be equated to remember the Sabbath?
I don't recall. You know, somebody was at, oh, I know, it was Pat, asked earlier, several weeks ago, about, you know, are there surahs that are mostly laws, just like the book of Leviticus? And then I promised to talk about that when we finish with the prophets. No, and I'm just going by my memory, but why would there be, you know, oh, well, I mean, I know they have prayers every Friday, but I don't recall that at all. I mean, you know, there's stuff about paying alms, there's a lot about the pilgrimage, which apparently was common even before Muhammad. All they did was sort of co-opt, just kind of like Christians did with the Saturnalia, you know, kind of co-opted it. I don't recall anything on that one, though. But surely there are rules about adultery, about murder, about theft, about, you know, all those other things that are just kind of obvious moral principles that you find in the Ten Commandments. Yeah.
Don, I had a question.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
It's Diane.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with Cargill's book, The Cities That Built the Bible.
Mm-mm.
Do you know that book? anyway, he was saying, because of all the translations from, you know, Greek, the Septuagint, et cetera, et cetera, that it was the reed sea, not the red sea.
Oh, yes, I've heard that too.
Is that something that's is valid, that really it wasn't a great sea? It was, if it's reeds, you could walk through it.
Yeah, I know.
What do you think?
I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical about attempts to rationalize things, you know. But I'm not a biblical scholar, so I really don't. I can't definitively pronounce on that question. But I know there have been a lot of people in the past who have tried to reimagine, you know, miraculous stories to make them sound more plausible. But I don't know really. I tend to take these stories at their face value, you know, and you know, if they sound completely implausible, well, they are, but I don't think they secretly mean something else that, you know, is more plausible. But I mean, you have attempts like, Jesus walking on the water. Well, there was really just underneath the surface, there was really a sandbar, you know, stuff like that, you know, you find out there. I sort of take that with a grain of salt. Anything else?
Well, he's an archaeologist, mm-hmm. not a biblical scholar, mm-hmm. but he pulls in a lot of mm-hmm. scholarship, which may or may not
be. Yeah, yeah. As I say, I've heard that explanation before, just a sea of reeds, in which case if you had a strong wind, for example, it might sort of maybe evaporate some of the water, perhaps. I don't know. But I doubt it, but I don't know for sure. Yeah. Well, I am going to relent after Tom's question of last time about Ezekiel, and you know, it's out of order historically, because clearly Ezekiel is a prophet of the exile, and the exile, we're a long way from the exile, let me back up. I'll erase these two names. Oh shoot! My eraser doesn't seem to work anymore for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, some more things, and you're not coming out here because you were being such a pain. You're going to stay in there.
So,
yeah, it's like you have a big plaything. Supposed to be in a big baby.
So this is... Let's see... Yeah, Zul Kifli. Is that right? F-L-I, yeah. Zul Kifli, also sometimes called, because it appears, Dal Kifl. Okay, there we go. And presumably... That's Ezekiel. Although there's some, I think most people identify that with Ezekiel, although there's always some dissenters. At any rate, I've seen him put in a couple of different places in the list of prophets, but more often than not, he's after Aaron. Oh, I should have put Aaron up there. But Aaron, let me put Aaron up there. That's Harun. Okay. I'll put him over here. I'm not going to read anything about Aaron because we've already read stuff about Aaron. There is no place in the Quran where Aaron is talked about, where Moses is also not talked about. Often, and you've heard them over the last few weeks, often it's Moses and Aaron together, but there's nothing with Aaron by himself. So we've already read several things about Aaron, and so there's no point in rereading what we've already read. So anyway, as I said, since most of the sources I've looked at put Zulkifli, after Aaron and before David, I will relent and move him there, even if it doesn't make any historical sense. And I guess, you know, if you think about it, if he's a prophet, maybe he could have lived earlier and was foreseeing all this stuff. I don't know. But anyway, there's very little. The only one is, with this long introduction, there's one verse that is, there are several verses in which he is mentioned in conjunction with a bunch of other prophets. I have been leaving those references out just because they're lists of various prophets. That's how we know some of these are considered to be prophets, even if there are no stories about them, because they're in the lists. And there are, two. There are two places where he's in a list. But, 2186 through 87, I'll read that one just, you know, to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. So, and this is a typical list. And remember Ishmael and Idris, and this is the second name, Dalkifel, all were steadfast, and we admitted them to our company. Surely they were of the righteous. Okay, you know, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. But the one verse that refers apparently to Ezekiel 2:260. So let me go to that. And that is this. And I guess it's because of this, I suppose, that he's identified with Ezekiel, I guess. Although, oddly enough, he's not named here. So I don't know. Or like him who passed by a town which had fallen down upon its roofs and exclaimed, "When will Allah restore it to life after its destruction?" Then Allah caused him to die for 100 years. Then he raised him and said, "How long hast thou remained in this state?" He answered, "I have remained a day or part of a day." He said, "Nay, thou hast remained in this state for 100 years. Now look at thy food and thy drink. They have not rotted. And look at thy ass. And we have done this that we may make thee a sign unto men. And look at the bones, how we set them and then clothed them with flesh." And when this became clear to him, he said, "I know that Allah has the power to do all that he wills. Probably because of the bones, with being clothed with flesh, that possibly might be a reference to the vision of Ezekiel. But that's all we have, other than the name popping up a couple of times. So that's that. Now we'll move on to David. And let me get that name right. Let's see. Okay. So, I think it's D-A-U-D, is that right? Yeah. Da-a-ood. Long A, long U, and that's David. Now here we have more stuff. Besides just the, you know, lists of names and stuff like that. So David, 2:247 to 2:52. Okay. "Hast thou not heard of the chiefs of the children of Israel after Moses, when they said to a prophet of theirs, 'Appoint for us a king, that we may fight in the cause of Allah?' He said, 'Is it not likely that you will not fight if fighting is prescribed for you?' They said, 'What reason have we to abstain from fighting in the cause of Allah when we have been driven forth from our homes and our sons?' But when fighting was ordained for them, they turned back, except a small number of them, and Allah knows the transgressors well. And their prophet said to them, 'Allah has appointed for you Talut as a king.' They said, 'How can he have sovereignty over us while we are better entitled to sovereignty than he, and he is not given abundance of wealth?' He said, 'Surely Allah has chosen him above you and has increased him abundantly in knowledge and body. And Allah gives sovereignty to whom he pleases, and Allah is bountiful, all-knowing.' And their prophet said to them, 'The sign of his sovereignty is that there shall be given to you a heart wherein there will be tranquility from your Lord and a legacy of good left by the family of Moses and the family of Aaron, the angels bearing it. Surely, in this, there is a sign for you if you are believers. Okay, so far. So that sounds to me, so far, this is going to 252, just seeing where I'm going here. Yeah, this sounds to me so far like Samuel and Saul, right? Doesn't that sound, you know, Samuel being the prophet and Saul being, what is it again? Talut. That is. Yeah. Presumably that would be Saul, the king. Okay. And when Talut set out with the forces, he said, surely Allah will try you with a river. So he who drinks therefrom is not of me, and he who tastes it not is assuredly of me, except him who takes a handful of water with his hand. Now I didn't look it up, but that reminds me of a story in the book of Judges. Isn't that Gideon? Somebody, where is it?
Arma says yes.
Okay. So maybe we have here a conflation of a couple of different stories. Because, you know, who's going to go with me? And then a group was going to drink in a certain way and then drink again or something. I forget, there's a series of things. But at the very end, he gets a very small group, but, intense group. But they drank of it, except a few of them. And when they crossed it, he and those who believed along with him, they said, we have no power today against Jalut and his forces. Okay, so there's now a Jalut. And his forces. Okay. But those who knew for certain that they would one day meet Allah said, how many a small party has triumphed over a large party by Allah's command? And Allah is with the steadfast. And when they issued forth to encounter Jalut and his forces, they said, O our Lord, pour forth steadfastness upon us and make our steps firm and help us against the disbelieving people. So they routed them by the command of Allah, and David slew Jalut, and Allah gave him sovereignty and wisdom and taught him of what he pleased. And had it not been for Allah's repelling men, some of them by the others, the earth would have become filled with disorder. But Allah is munificent to all peoples. These are the signs of Allah. We recite them unto thee with truth. Surely thou art one of the messengers. I guess thou in this last verse is Muhammad. So I presume Jalut is Goliath. I presume. I mean, it. Most of the story seems to track the Old Testament story fairly well, except for this business about, which sounds like the story of Gideon that somehow got melded in there with the story of Saul, but the king. Okay. So that seems to be a reference to the story of David and Goliath. Okay. Next story. 38:18-27. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I got so many tabs in here. That's 37. Wait a minute. Which color am I on? Maybe it's this one. Oh, here we are. I hope I'm in the right place. Yeah. 38:18-27. Bear patiently what they say and remember our servant David, a man of strong hands. Surely he was always turning to God. We subjected to him the mountains. They celebrated God's praises and with him at nightfall and sunrise. We subjected to him the birds gathered together, all turned to him. and we strengthened his kingdom and gave him wisdom and decisive judgment. And has the story of the disputants reached thee when they climbed over the wall of his chamber? When they entered in upon David, and he was afraid of them. They said, "Fear not, we are two disputants. One of us has transgressed against the other, so judge between us with justice, and deviate not from the right course, and guide us to the right way. This is my brother, he has 99 ewes, and I have one ewe, yet he says, 'Give it to me,' and has been overbearing to me in his address." David said, "Surely he has wronged thee in demanding thy ewe in addition to his own ewes. And certainly many partners transgress against one another, except those who believe in God and do good works, and these are but few." And David perceived that we had tried him. So he asked forgiveness of his Lord and fell down, bowing in worship, and turned to him. So we forgave him that. And indeed, he had a position of nearness with us and an excellent retreat. O David, we have made thee a vice-regent in the earth. So judge between men with justice, and follow not vain desire, lest it should lead thee astray from the way of Allah. Surely those who go astray from the way of Allah will have severe punishment, because they forgot the day of reckoning." What does that sound like? No takers?
Bathsheba.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it sounds like. Sounds like the story of Bathsheba and Nathan the prophet. But it's a weird version of it. Because it's not Nathan the prophet. It's actually the two people, in a way, the two people that Nathan the prophet was talking about who come into David's chamber. You know, they climbed over the wall of his chamber, so I guess his bedroom, and I guess Bathsheba's there too, but she's not mentioned. But then basically the story of the two disputants turns out to be similar to the story that Nathan the parable, I guess you'd say, that Nathan the prophet tells David. And it turns out, you know, that dramatic moment, one of the high points of the entire Bible, I think, you know, the dramatic moment with David's all, you know, indignant, filled with righteous indignation about this guy who's taking advantage of the weaker guy. And Nathan, of course, says, you know, "You are the man." It's not quite as dramatic here, though. But that's got to be what it alludes to.
Well, if it does, that's pretty low-key considering the what he actually did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't have the drama of the biblical story, certainly.
Unless I missed something, there was no adultery called out.
No, it's more implicit, maybe. I mean, you know, he's in the bed chamber. Well, who's there besides David? Is he by himself? Doubt it. Right, but yeah, it's not explicit. And unlike the story in, I guess it's what, Samuel? I guess it's where it is. 2 Samuel? I don't remember.
Well, here, if you want it so that David is one of the prophets,
yeah,
and not have Nathan, then you need to be a little more kind of like dance around the issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That David wasn't necessarily always such an upstanding guy.
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, you do, I think. Because he's, you know, mostly praised here, and there's just a little bit of a hint. David perceived that we had tried him, and so he asked forgiveness. Fell down, you know. But it does not have the drama, it does not have the moral ambiguity of David, the way he is in the Bible story.
You start pulling on that thread and you can't do it in a paragraph. So I guess they just cut it off early.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, is this the version of the story that was circulating in Arabia, you know, in the 7th century? Or is this a deliberate playing down of some of the details, you know, like Reuben suggested, because of David's status as one of the, you know, great... the greats from, you know, I don't know. I'm sort of inclined to agree with Reuben, though, on that. But once again, you know, familiar stories, but different emphases. You know, here the emphasis is more on just extolling David, really, I would say. But in the Bible story, the emphasis is on David's his imperfection, you know, and thus as sort of a stand-in for humanity in general. You know, I don't care how good we are, or how good you think you are, or whatever. There's going to be some sort of imperfection there, and David's a good example of that. I mean, overall, a very admirable person, but not 100%. You know. So yeah, this pales, I think, in comparison to the Hebrew story. Okay. 4:164 is next. So let's see here. Okay. Just one verse. This is yet another verse which is a list, and I normally wouldn't include it except a little bit. There's a little bit of detail about David, not just a name, but a little bit of detail. Surely we have sent revelation to thee, that would be Muhammad, as we have sent revelation to Noah and the prophets after him, and we sent revelation to Abraham and Ishmael and Isaac and Jacob and his children, and to Jesus and Job and Jonah and Aaron and Solomon, and we gave David a book. What's the book? Any takers?
Psalms?
Yes, that's right. And another reference, and this is Surah. Did I tell you what the other one was? The other one was Surah 4:164. This is 17:56. Yet another one. And thy Lord knows best those that are in the heavens and in the earth. And we exalted some of the prophets over the others. And to David we gave a book. Okay, yet another reference then, undoubtedly to the book of Psalms. And then there are two more stories, 21:79-81. Now, these are weird. I don't recall these in the Bible at all. although, you could say maybe implicitly they are, I don't know. And remember David and Solomon when they exercised their respective judgments concerning the crop of when sheep of a certain people strayed therein by night, and we were witness to their judgment. We gave Solomon the right understanding of the matter, and to each of them we gave wisdom and knowledge. We subjected the mountains and the birds to celebrate God's praises with David, and it is we who do all such things. Maybe yet another reference to the book of Psalms, I don't know. And we taught him, now this is the new part, though. And we taught him the making of coats of mail for you, that they might protect you from each other's violence. Will you then be thankful? And again, 34:11-12. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. 34:11-12. And certainly we bestowed grace upon David from ourselves. O ye mountains, repeat the praises of Allah with him. O birds, ye also. That sounds more like Psalms again. But anyway, there's more coming up. And we made the iron soft for him, saying, make thou full-length coats of mail, and make the rings of a proper measure, and do righteous deeds. Surely I see all that you do. So, I mean, David is like the inventor of armor. I mean, that's what it sounds like. You know, we gave David inspiration and told him how to make armor, coats of mail. Now that I do not believe is anywhere in the Bible, although you could say maybe implicitly there. I mean, there was a lot of warfare going on, of course, and stories of battles and things like that. So maybe you could say it was implied, but nothing explicit that I can remember at all concerning David and coats of mail.
John, yeah. Goliath had a coat of mail.
Okay, yeah. So what does that mean about David's inventing of it? maybe that was a case of compromised intelligence or something like that.
In 1 Samuel, it says the Goliath had bronze armor on his legs, a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders, armed with a coat of mail. Hmm. The weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, if you can wind up conflating Gideon with David, right? I mean, that was in the earlier thing, I guess. You can, I guess, wind up conflating Goliath with David, too. Or get the coats of mail from that story and then apply it to David, perhaps. I mean, it's loosely connected in the Bible, I guess, in that sense, but not attributed to him at all. But anyway, there it is. Let's see now. The next one, of course, is Solomon. Let me get that spelled right. See what great progress we're making this morning? After stalling on Moses for like 4 weeks or whatever. Okay. Can you still see down here? I hope you can.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Sulai. Sulaiman. Yes, Sulaiman. And that's Solomon. Okay. And let's see now, we're going to... Okay, 21, 79 through 80. We already sort of looked at this, I think, but 21, 79 through 80. Here we go. Yeah, we did. But I will reread it because it does pertain to Solomon. Yeah. Also, and remember David and Solomon when they exercised their respective judgments. Of course, that's what Solomon was, of course, famous for, his wisdom. Concerning the crop, when the sheep of certain people strayed therein by night, and we were witness to their judgment, and we gave Solomon the right understanding of the matter, and to each of them we gave wisdom and knowledge, and so forth and so on. Then it talks about David. So that's what we already read about Solomon and his wisdom. And then, 82 and 83, in the same surah, this is Surah 21, 82 through 83. And we subjected to Solomon the violent wind. It blew at his bidding toward the land which we had blessed, and we had knowledge of all things. And we subjected to him deep divers who dived for him and did other work beside that, and it was we who guarded them. Okay. I assume that this is a reference to Solomon's wealth, you know? And then another one, 38, 31 through 41, same idea. 38. Let's see, I've got to find my tab. Oh, here we go. 31 through 41. And we bestowed on David Solomon, who was an excellent servant. He was always turning to us. When there were brought before him at eventide steeds of noblest breed and swift of foot, he said, I love the love of horses because of the remembrance of my Lord. So great was his love of them that when they were hidden behind the veil, he said, bring them back to me. Then he began to pass his hand over their legs and their necks. And we did try Solomon, and we placed on his throne a mere body. And then he turned to God, seeking his mercy. He said, O my Lord, grant me forgiveness and bestow on me a kingdom, that I will not suit anyone after me. Surely thou art the great bestower. So we subjected to him the wind, blowing gently by his command. That's the same idea as before. Whithersoever he desired to go, and the giants, all sorts of builders and divers, and others bound in fetters. This is our gift, to give freely or withhold without reckoning. And certainly he had a position of nearness with us and an excellent retreat. Yeah. So, once again, at least partly a reference to his wealth builders and divers and that sort of thing. I'm not sure about this earlier reference to this. We placed on the throne, his throne, a mere body. And then he turned to God seeking his mercy and grant me forgiveness and bestow on me a kingdom that will not suit anyone after me. I'm not sure what, I don't recall that at all in the Bible, anything resembling that. But most of this, of course, is about Solomon's wealth. So his wisdom, his wealth. And then, of course, 27, let me go back to 27. Yeah. 27, 16 through 45. Aha! Fairly long one. Let me just see where I'm going. Okay, go into there. You tell me what this is when we get into it. And we gave knowledge to David and Solomon, and they said, all praise belongs to Allah, who has exalted us above many of his believing servants. And Solomon was heir to David, and he said, O ye people, we have been taught the language of birds, and we have had everything bestowed upon us. This indeed is God's manifest grace. That bird thing, I guess, is sort of a back reference to David. And there were gathered then together unto Solomon his hosts of jinn, and men and birds, and they were formed into separate divisions. Remember the jinn, the fire creatures. Until when they came to the valley of Al-Namal, one woman of the tribe of the Namal said, O ye Namal, enter your habitations, lest Solomon and his hosts crush you, while they know not. Thereupon he smiled, laughing at her words, and said, My Lord, grant me the will and power to be grateful for thy favor, which thou hast bestowed upon me and upon my parents, and to do such good works as would please thee, and admit me by thy mercy among thy righteous servants. And he reviewed the birds and said, How is it that I do not see Hudhud? Is he among the absentees? I will surely punish him with a severe punishment, or I will slay him unless he bring me a clear reason for his absence. And he did not tarry long before Hudhud came, and said, I have encompassed that which thou hast not encompassed, and I have come to thee from Saba with sure tidings. I found a woman ruling over them, and she has been given everything, and she has a mighty throne. I found her and her people worshipping the sun instead of Allah. And Satan made their works look beautiful to them, and has thus hindered them from the right way, so that they follow not guidance. And Satan has bid them not to worship Allah, who brings to light that which is hidden in the heavens and in the earth, and who knows what you conceal and what you make known. Allah, there is no God but He, the Lord of the mighty throne. Solomon said, We shall see whether thou hast spoken the truth, or whether thou art one of those who lie. Go thou with this letter of mine and lay it before them, then withdraw from them and see what answer they return. The queen said, Ye chiefs, there has been delivered to me a noble letter. It is from Solomon, and it is, quote, In the name of Allah, the gracious, the merciful, behave not proudly towards me, but come to me in submission. She said, Ye chiefs, advise me in the matter that is before me. I never decide any matter until you are present with me, and give me your advice. They replied, We possess power, and we possess great prowess in war, but it is for thee to command. Therefore consider thou what thou wilt command. So they're ping-ponging back and forth here. She said, Surely kings, when they enter a country, despoil it, and turn the highest of its people into the lowest, and thus they will do. But I am going to send them a present and wait to see what answer the envoys bring back. So, when the queen's ambassador came to Solomon, he said, Do you mean to help me with your wealth? But that which Allah has given me is better than that which He has given you. Nay, but you rejoice in your gift. Go back then, for we shall surely come to them with hosts against which they will have no power, and we shall drive them out from their disgraced, and they will be humbled. He said, O nobles, which of you will bring me a throne for her before they come to me submitting? I'm getting lost in the he said, let's see, she says, blah, blah, blah. So when the king's ambassador came to Solomon, he said, okay, right. So the ambassador is saying, do you mean to help me with your wealth? But that which Allah has given me is better than that which he's given you. Nay, but you rejoice in your gift. Go back to them, for we shall surely come to them with hosts against which they will have no power. We will drive them there from their disgrace, and they will be humbled. And he said, I guess Solomon said, O nobles, which of you will bring me a throne for her before they come to me submitting? Said a stalwart from among the jinn, I will bring it to thee before thou rise from thy camp, and indeed I possess power, and therefore and I am trustworthy. Said one who had knowledge of the book, I will bring it to thee before thy noble messengers return to thee. And when he saw it, set before him, he said, this is by the grace of my Lord, that he may try me whether I am grateful or ungrateful. And whosoever is grateful for the good of his own soul, but whosoever is ungrateful, truly, my Lord is self-sufficient, generous. He said, make her throne unrecognizable to her, and let us see whether she follows the right way, or whether she is one of those who follow not the right way. And when she came, it was said, is thy throne like this? She replied, it is as though they were the same, and we had been given knowledge before this, and we have already submitted. And that which she used to worship beside Allah had stopped her from believing, for she came of a disbelieving people. It was said to her, enter the palace. And when she saw it, she thought it to be a great expanse of water, and she uncovered her shanks. Solomon said, it is a palace paved smooth with slabs of glass. She said, my Lord, I indeed wronged my soul, and I submit myself with Solomon to Allah, the Lord of the worlds. So what is this story about?
Queen of Sheba.
Yes, right, right. It's Saba, S-A, well, it's... That's what it is, Saba, and I guess that's just a variant of Sheba, but here we have gobs of details that are not in the Bible at all. I mean, Queen of Sheba, I didn't look it up, but maybe some of you are tracking along, but my memory is it's not hugely detailed in the Bible story. Am I correct on that? Those of you who are looking it up?
Yes, you are correct.
Okay, yeah. Just sort of mentioned and that's that. But here, boy, I mean, you know. And, of course, the emphasis, naturally, given the typical emphases, as we have seen, is, well, she comes of a disbelieving people, right? And that's the whole gravamen of the whole story. You know, this is the whole point. I mean, you have the believers, you have the disbelievers. And I guess you'd say this is a story of her conversion. The business about the thrones, and she comes to Solomon, and the throne is just like the one, so she thought, was her own throne. And then she when she enters the palace, she thinks it's a great expanse of water, and she uncovered her shanks, I guess thinking she had to walk through the water or something like that, maybe. But then he says, no, it's really just slabs of glass. And then she says, I have wronged my soul. I submit myself with Solomon to Allah, the Lord of the worlds. That's the climax of the story. So yeah, I guess this is the conversion of the Queen of Sheba. I guess in this version, at least, she was not already a believer. Or maybe she accepted Allah along with other gods, I guess, is the impression I have, which is like Muhammad's contemporaries who worshipped multiple gods, among them Allah. Let's see. And there's 34. There's one more on the Queen of Sheba.
Don?
Yeah.
A minor digression about variant spellings. Is there a variant spelling of Sulaiman called Salman, as in the author Salman Rushdie?
Yeah, I don't know. Possibly.
Okay.
Can look it up. The other one is 34:13-22. And to Solomon we subjected the wind. Its morning course was a month's journey, and its evening course was a month's journey too. And we caused a fount of molten copper to flow for him, and of the gin were some who worked under him by the command of his Lord. And we had told him that if any of them turned away from our command, we would make him taste the punishment of burning fire. They made for him what he desired: palaces and statues and basins like reservoirs and large cooking vessels fixed in their places. Work ye, O house of David, gratefully, but few of my servants are grateful. And when we decreed that Solomon's death, nothing pointed out to them that he was dead, save a worm of the earth that ate away at his staff. So when he fell down, the gen plainly realized that if they had known the unseen, they would not have remained in a state of degraded torment. There was indeed a sign for Saba and their homeland, two gardens on the right hand and on the left. Eat of the provision of your Lord and be grateful to him, a good land and a most forgiving Lord. But they turned away. So we sent against them a fierce flood, and we gave them in lieu of their gardens two gardens bearing bitter fruit and tamarisk with few lotus trees. That we awarded them because of their ingratitude, and none do we requite in this way but the ungrateful. And we placed between them and the towns which we had blessed other towns that were prominently visible, and we fixed easy stages between them, traveling them for nights and days in security. But they said, our Lord placed longer distances between the stages of our journeys, and they wronged themselves, so we made them bywords, and we broke them into pieces, a complete breaking up. And that, verily, are signs for every steadfast and grateful person. And Iblis found that his judgment of them was true, that's Satan, so they followed him, all except a party of true believers. And he had no power over them, but it was so that we might distinguish those who believed in the hereafter from those who were in doubt about it. And thy Lord is watchful over all things. So again, that features Saba, Sheba, which elsewhere, by the way, is called Tuba. That's just another variant of that. Okay, we're out of time. Ooh, it's 10. We're really out of time. So we've gotten through Solomon. That's pretty good. We're almost to the New Testament. Elijah, Elisha, and Jonah are coming up before we hit the New Testament. So we'll probably get there next week. So great progress. Thanks. See you next week.
Thanks, Don.
Yeah. Bye. Bye-bye.
Don. Bye.
Uh-huh.